Tonight on the Daily Debrief.
I'm absolutely telling you the truth. Oh, my God.
A babysitter on trial for allegedly battering a child and causing her death. Tonight, we go inside the police interrogation room. Plus, trial continues in Florida, where a dad is charged with murdering his daughter by tossing her off a bridge. Also, it's reckoning day for an actor who claimed he was the victim of a hate-filled attack. Charges were dropped, but could he still face prosecution? The nation's most fascinating cases are on the Daily Debrief. It's Thursday, April 4th.
And good evening, everybody. I'm Michael Bryant. Thank you for joining me on the Daily Debrief. In for Aaron tonight. Actor Jussie Smollett's legal troubles were seemingly over until the city of Chicago came asking for payback. Literally. Rachel Stockman has the latest details.
Thursday is deadline day for Jussie Smollett to repay the $130,000 bill for investigative costs sent him by the city of Chicago. When the Cook County State's attorney dropped charges against Jussie Smollett for allegedly staging a hoax hate crime on himself, it sparked a nationwide controversy.
The police found probable cause. 23 grand jurors in Cook County found probable cause. The case was indicted, and he was given a kiss and get-out-of-jail-free card.
And drove a wedge between the city's mayor and police chief on one side and Cook County State's attorney Kim Fox on the other.
This is a whitewash of justice.
Fox has defended her office's actions as a common approach to low-level felonies. Shortly after the charges were dropped, the Chicago city attorney sent a letter to Smollett demanding repayment for money spent on investigating his claims. The letter threatens that the Chicago Department of Law could prosecute him for making a false statement to the city if he doesn't pay up. Attorneys for Smollett have not responded to requests for comment from the Law and Crime Network about whether or not he intends to pay the money. For Law and Crime, this is Rachel Stockman.
Explosive interrogation video in court shows an Ohio babysitter's own account of what happened when a young girl died in her care. Lindsay Parton is charged with murder, involuntary manslaughter, and three counts of endangering child. The victim, Hannah Weshey, was just 3 years old when she died. Parton was babysitting her when the young girl reportedly dumped ketchup in a toilet, which could be considered typical child behavior, according to the prosecutor. However, Parton allegedly decided to lash out. And according to the Butler County Sheriff's Office, she admits to hitting the child. Parton's 911 call was played in court today for the first time, and they heard it this morning. She can be heard describing Hannah's condition during her last conscious moments. Police interrogation was also played for the jury today. She describes what happened when Hannah was dropped off at her home that morning.
So, it takes back to this morning when Hannah gets here.
Okay, we walked in the door like normal.
Through the front door, back door.
Where you guys came in mm-hmm. and sat her down.
Was he carrying her?
Mm-hmm. He carries her in, has her blanket over her. It's cold, obviously, right now. We sat her down.
In the garage?
She's standing there, and, they kissed goodbye, whatever. He stopped back to the kitchen, she said, okay, bye. And I looked at her, I said, are you tired this morning, or do you want to stay up? She said, I want to stay up. I said, okay. So we walked in, she was in front of me. I opened the door, she was in front of me. That red chair that sits right there, my phone down, started to take off my robe. She looked at me, like, can we do couch and donut? Because they always do, they like the powdered donuts in the morning before we have breakfast. It's hit or miss that she decides to go back to bed or wants the couch sometimes. So I said, of course, and she went to take off her jacket and just fell forward. And like I said, Hannah, get up. What are you doing? I thought maybe she tripped because I was putting my robe down. I wasn't necessarily looking at her, and she didn't get back up.
As the interrogation continues, Parton repeatedly insists she had nothing to do with the child's death and is seemingly shocked to learn Hannah's injuries were life-threatening.
The doctors down in D.C., Hannah's not doing good. Okay? Whatever happened to her happened this morning.
Oh, my God.
It's not from the fall from yesterday. She has a severe brain bleed.
Oh, my God.
So what we need is the truth from you.
Me and her. She walked in herself.
They're saying that's not possible.
Oh my God. How she was acting was normal. Yes. I swear on my daughter's life, she walked into the house and nothing was abnormal whatsoever. Not one thing. I don't know what else to say.
Parton's defense is placing blame at the feet of Hannah's father. She tells detectives that Hannah showed up covered in bruises that morning and tries to say that she placed a 911 call 30 seconds after Hannah arrived at her home. Cops have a different take on both of those topics.
Where else have you seen bruises on her that's you've looked at?
I
just know she's been beat, and that's the cause of her death today.
I would never hurt her. Jason's telling us that she gets hurt a lot at your house. That she always comes home with bruises. That's completely untrue. She comes to my house with bruises.
Okay. So who do we believe?
I know.
If you're not doing it, who is?
How long was she in the house?
Not long. 30 seconds.
And then 911 was called.
Yeah, I called him first. I wasn't really sure.
You were good with Mac?
Not really, no.
All right, I'm gonna try to help you out with time, with the clock. 6:52 a.m. So let's give him benefit of the doubt, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
7:02 a.m.
Yeah.
Or excuse me. Yes, 7:02 a.m.
Yes.
All right, 7:02 a.m. If it's 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When do you think that 911 call was placed?
I don't know.
8:20.
Are you serious?
1 hour and 18 minutes later.
A sheriff's deputy told the jury that Parton had talked about the timeline and the events that morning and the alleged cause of Hannah's injuries.
Did you speak to the defendant, Ms. Parton, in this case?
Yes, I did.
And what did she say?
I asked her what happened. She stated that her father, Jason Weshey, responded over there. She stated that she often babysits Hannah. And Jason showed up that morning, and when he dropped her off, she walked through the garage. She walked up the steps into the house, said that she just passed out. She fell face forward into the carpeted floor.
So when you say she walked in, who are we talking about?
When Hannah came in, that she had asked her for a donut and to sit on the couch, and that's when she said she just passed out, fell face forward into the carpeted floor. She stated that the day before, which would have been March 7th, approximately 4 p.m., that she was playing in the garage and she fell and hit her head on the concrete floor of the garage.
And when you say she fell and hit her head, are we talking about
that would
Hannah?
Have been Hannah.
told a detective about several alleged falls that Hannah had. Again, she says one happened in the morning of her death and that it was involving a small cart.
As we walked through the kitchen, we stopped into the dining room, and that's where she had pointed to the child's cart and said that's where Hannah had fell, struck her head on the way down.
When the defendant was telling you about hitting this cart or how Hannah hit this cart, did she ever elaborate on how she hit that cart or that basket?
She did. She demonstrated how it happened.
She said that Hannah was walking in through the dining room and turned around, looked back at her, and as she's taking her jacket off, she says, "Donuts and couch," and falls down and hits her face on the cart as she heads down towards the floor.
Now, Parton also told the detective about a fall in which Hannah had the day before she lost consciousness, allegedly involving a toy train and Hannah's mischievous behavior.
She had told us that Hannah, on a previous day, got into the kitchen, and I don't recall if it was ketchup or mustard, but she took one of the bottles and walked into the bathroom and was squirting it into the toilet. She said that she can be rather mischievous. She spoke about the train. She pointed that out to us when we were in the garage and explained to us what had happened with Hannah the night before. She informed us there that she let Jason know at 5 when he arrived to pick her up.
And you indicate that you've had an opportunity to measure that orange part of that seat.
I did.
And from your measurement, how tall is that seat?
8 inches.
So trial attorney Randy Kessler joins me to talk about this case. Randy, first of all, thank you for joining me here on the Daily Debrief. So we're hearing now from the defendant, maybe in the only way we will, through these police interrogations. We heard the 911 call. And now we're hearing about some of these other falls that the defendant suggests may have caused the injuries suffered by Hannah. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's sort of a unique way for the defense to look credible or to get some sympathy, because you got to make that tough decision, right? In every case, does the defendant take the stand? And putting that person up there, she's a victim, she looks like. She's, oh my God, you're going to accuse me of killing this child? I mean, I think her reaction was pretty authentic, although I don't know how I'd react if I really did kill somebody, because I couldn't even conceive of that. So, but it's getting some sympathy. You want to hear the defendant talk if you're on the jury, if you're the judge. Everybody wants to know, what's her position? What does she think about it? In this case, they got to see, and it wasn't that bad for her.
You know, I would agree with her demeanor. She seems appropriate. But then when she's talking about these falls, 8 inches off the little train, and I don't know that the jury can envision the level of injury suffered by little Hannah from these kinds of falls. I'll tell you who I want to see next, though, okay, whether we see Parton or not take the stand. Where's Dad? I want to see Jason up on the stand. Jason Wesche, remember, he dropped the child off that morning, and within a very short period of time, she lost consciousness. So how important is it for the jury to hear from this guy and hear him fill in some of these holes?
Well, it sort of depends. If you're the defendant and you're afraid that he might present well, you'd rather have him be somebody they don't even meet and don't even know who he is, because sometimes imagination is worse than reality. Somebody did this horrible thing. And if they like the defendant, or they think she's a likable person, reminds them of their sister, their mother, their whoever, it might be easier to pin it on somebody who's sort of anonymous. So maybe the defense doesn't want that person there. Maybe the prosecution does, to say, look, this guy's a nice guy. It couldn't have been him. So depending on which side you're on, you may or may not want him. But I think the jury, of course, would be curious, because if in their mind he's a possible suspect, they certainly want to see him and hear from him.
Yeah, I think what they're going to have to go through is, if he does not testify, is they're going to have to be comfortable either finding this defendant guilty or figuring it was some other cause. And if he doesn't take the stand, they're left to kind of their own imagination as to what that other cause might be. I just think these falls that we've heard about are just so minor. What I also wanted to ask you about was the timeline within which these things happened and the injuries appeared. I mean, isn't it possible that some older injuries ultimately took effect and ultimately killed this girl?
Yeah, all that's possible. I mean, do you believe science, or do you believe what your eyes and ears are telling you? And that's the best thing about the interview for the defendant. She looked credible. And if the jury can't get that out of their mind, that, God, what if I was falsely accused? I would react the exact same way. I would say, no, I promise that's what happened. If they can't get that out of their mind, even if they're convinced by the science and by the doctors and by the investigators, if it's a balancing act and they're not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt, they still are doubting it, there may not be a conviction.
Is this a case in which it just sometimes becomes too easy to blame this defendant because the case is so heartbreaking and you have such a young victim.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it makes the defense position so much weaker, it seems.
Yeah, because there's not any other alternative explanations. There's a good scientific explanation for it, and then there's this crazy story, which is what anybody would use as a story if they actually killed somebody. You would say, oh my God, I'm gonna have to say she fell. I'm gonna have to do something like that. So it's a balance, but again, you know, that's why we have jury trials. That's why there's not a plea. They think there's a chance she's gonna get off or there's not a good enough offer. But you're right, the prosecution has to pretty much say it's A plus B equals C. Ladies and gentlemen, don't leave your common sense at home. Children do not just fall like this. These things do not happen. You've heard the scientists, the doctors, the technology. We've told you, we've proven the only way this happened was by human interaction. The babysitter did it, put her in jail.
Thank you, Randy. Stay put. We're going to talk more as the show continues. But first, coming up, a gruesome discovery at a Staten Island storage unit. It may provide answers in the case of a missing woman. Plus, trial continues in Florida, where a man is charged with murdering his daughter by throwing her off a bridge. His defense team plans to rest their case. Have they convinced a jury of their argument? We'll take you inside the courtroom after the break. And welcome back to The Debrief. A woman who stabbed her boyfriend to death has learned her fate. Melanie Eam is sentenced to 50 years behind bars for stabbing her boyfriend, James Berry, to death shortly after Berry ended their relationship. According to prosecutors, Eam's defense team tried to pin the murder on Berry's mother's boyfriend, saying he disliked Eam and was angry with her for taking advantage of their family. Eam plans on appealing her sentence. A gruesome discovery in a storage unit just days after a teacher and mother of three disappeared. Janine Camerata's body was found in a Staten Island storage facility Thursday morning. Almost a week after the search began for her body, police sources say her remains were reportedly burnt beyond recognition and were placed inside of a black plastic bag. Camerata and her husband Michael were in the initial stages of a rough divorce, and he was arrested Wednesday on charges not related to her death. Police sources say he was seen on surveillance video carrying a garbage bag into the storage facility where her remains were located. Trial continues in a Florida courtroom where a man is accused of killing his daughter by throwing her off a bridge. John Johnchuk is accused of murdering Phoebe Johnchuk by releasing her into Tampa Bay. The question is whether the defendant is legally insane or whether he can be held criminally responsible. Prosecutors are trying him on charges of first-degree murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and aggravated fleeing and eluding officers. Video of Johnchuk's initial court appearance was shown today in court. He tells the judge he doesn't want a court-appointed lawyer and that he would prefer to leave his legal fate in the hands of God.
Thank you. You're here on the charge of murder in the first degree and you have no bond. Can you hire your own lawyer? Do you have the wherewithal to hire an attorney, sir?
No.
I'm sorry. He's not. Would you like me to hire an attorney to represent you?
No.
Are you sure?
I want to leave it in the hands of God.
Okay. So you want to represent yourself?
I want to leave it in the hands of God.
Pretty sure God's not going to be representing you in this case. You're going to be standing trial. Would you like someone standing next to you as you're standing trial?
Yeah.
An attorney.
That is pure and good, not evil.
I'm going to do the best I can to give you a pure and good lawyer. If you raise your right hand. Can you raise his right hand?
I don't want a court-appointed lawyer. I want to leave it in the hands of God.
This week, John Chuck's defense team said they were concerned about his mental state and said he had been hallucinating and confusing about things happening in court. A court-appointed doctor who previously determined John Chuck competent to stand trial did so once again, and a second doctor told the court that he believes John Chuck is competent.
Could you tell us what your opinion is regarding Mr. John Chuck's competence to proceed?
He's competent to proceed. I had asked him what he was charged with. He told me first-degree murder. I asked him if he could explain the allegation. He told me that it was alleged that he killed his daughter, Bobby. I asked how that happened. He said, how she passed? He said, drowning. And then he asked him, how did they connect him to the crime? He said, a cop saw me do it. Okay. I'd asked him then the possible penalties. He told me life in prison or not guilty by reason of insanity, and that the death penalty had been taken off the table.
Attorney Randy Kessler joined me once again. Now, Randy, it sure sounds like he understands the charges against him and is able to help his attorneys in his defense. That's basically what he needs to do to be competent. But we know that could change at any time. So as we move forward, at what point is it safe? I mean, what if the jury gets the case, but before delivering a verdict, he loses it and is no longer competent? What happens then?
Well, you know, once the evidence is already in and then the evidence is closed, the jury has to make a decision based on what the evidence is before them. So, you know, the bottom line is, I don't know that this is going to work. I think a lot of jurors see insanity as a get-out-of-jail-free card. You're not really paying the penalty. But, yeah, you know, what if he stops the trial? What if he has a seizure in the middle of the trial? There are lots of things that could go about causing the trial to end prematurely or a mistrial. But so far, they've got the doctors on board, so they're going with the doctors who say he's competent.
And it's just really a ticking clock as to whether his meds hold out and then he stays with it. You mentioned something very important, you know, the jury. What do they really think not guilty by reason of insanity means?
I think the layperson, and I've talked to a lot of folks about this, and we teach trial law at Emory, they think that's a get-out-of-jail-free. They think it's not legitimate that, you know, of course he's somewhat crazy. What kind of person would do something like that? But he's not crazy enough that he shouldn't have to pay the same consequences that anybody else would. He lives in our country. He's subject to the same rules. He violated the rules. He pays the consequences. Saying insanity. People don't understand insanity. And not to lighten it, but mental health is really a problem in America, and a lot of people don't understand mental health, and it's going to work against him. There are a lot of mentally ill people. There are people that have a lot of mental health problems. The problem is you don't see mental health, right? You don't see it like a broken arm. So a lot of jurors are going to discount it and not believe it.
Very quickly now, we just got a few seconds left here, Randy. The defense is about done with their case. We'll hear a brief rebuttal. What should the prosecution focus on?
I don't know what the prosecution should focus on. I think if I was a prosecutor, I'd say the facts are the facts are the facts. I'd keep it very simple. I'd say he was caught in the act. You have an honest cop just doing his job, an innocent child, and a guy who should do everything in the world to prevent exactly what he did to his daughter. I don't think that's
Thank you, Randy. Randy, I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm going to leave you there. I do thank you for joining me tonight. And thank everybody for watching the Daily Debrief tonight. Join us again tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Long Crime Network. Live trial coverage again tomorrow at 9. Thank you.